I'm Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday, March the 5th, and it's time for our State Capitol Report. Every Monday in the 7 o'clock hour, we catch up on what our legislature did last week, and we'll preview what our lawmakers will be up to in the week ahead. This week, we have a news-packed hour for you with our state government reporter, Sean Johnson, getting us up to date. We'll hear some clips from legislative debates last week. We'll also talk about the indictment of a big campaign contributor to Governor Doyle's reelection campaign for allegedly skirting campaign contribution laws. Assistant News Director Brian Bull will be joining us to talk about what issues were raised in the annual State of the Tribes address before the legislature last week. And after 7:30, we will welcome in State Senator Spencer Coggs from Milwaukee. He's the chair of a committee that will hold a hearing on the governor's Milwaukee initiatives in his proposed state budget. The governor says everyone in the state has a stake in the success of Milwaukee, and it's time for everyone to understand we are in this together. And the governor wants to boost spending in Milwaukee by about $80 million. We'll wonder if the legislature will go along with this, and we'll wonder if you want the legislature to go along with this, to put more nurses in schools, to put more police officers on the streets in Milwaukee, to train more Milwaukee residents for jobs, to reduce class sizes in public schools. That's coming up in our State Capitol Report after 7:30 this morning. All right, well, let's get to it. Joining us first is Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio's state government reporter. Good morning, Sean.
Hi, Joy.
Lots of stuff going on at the state capitol. Last week, we should update some of the things we've talked about in the past state capitol reports. I know the legislature's been grappling with this sick leave benefit that legislators have sick leave, and there's a big controversy over whether they were using it properly. Apparently, some legislators being sick and they weren't claiming sick days. What's the latest on the sick leave benefit?
Well, the Assembly has now passed a bill that would end the sick leave for elected officials, not just lawmakers, but DAs, judges, the governor, for example. This bill would completely wipe it out. And this is an issue that was really debated extensively on the floor. I think when you see something that directly affects lawmakers, you get some pretty impassioned pleas on both sides. But I think where it's left right now is that the Senate's not really interested in ending this benefit altogether. And Democrats there want instead to change the sick leave reporting system so that when you're sick, you actually report it. Whereas right now, a Journal Sentinel analysis showed that nobody does.
Yeah. In fact, I think we have a clip here of State Representative Therese Brousseau of Madison arguing that taking away the sick leave benefit was the wrong move.
We have been talking in this legislature about how do we make sure everybody has access and how do we make sure it's affordable to all. So why are we trying to take a step backwards?
And that's got to be probably the harder position to argue in this particular debate, isn't it, Sean?
Yeah, and you heard several people make that argument on the floor, but when it came down to a final vote, most people ended up voting to get rid of this. Representative Brousseau there, you heard her talking about this is a step backward because you're taking away a retirement benefit, something that ensures people have health care, and others say it ensures that you can have citizen legislators. Seems like the main arguments against that are that lawmakers are paid a salary whether they're working or not, so that you don't need this extra benefit. And the other argument against it has just been some lawmakers who say, hey, people in private industry can't expect this, so why should we give it to ourselves?
So the State Assembly passes this bill to get rid of the sick leave benefit, but the Senate is not likely to go along with that. The sick leave benefit will remain, but there'll be better reporting required.
And Governor Jim Doyle has also talked about we should be changing the way we report this and not getting rid of it altogether.
Now, we talked last week about this voter ID bill that the Assembly was supposed to take up last week. What happened there?
They took it up. They didn't have a final vote on it just yet. That'll come next week, likely. This is a pretty familiar argument at the Capitol. I think Republican lawmakers have pushed for it at least the last four sessions. So, you know, this is one of their core issues, or at least they've made it that. This one would be a referendum that goes before voters, and they'd be able to decide whether you should require a photo ID at the polls. But it's likely not going to get there because Democrats have opposed this pretty consistently, and they control the Senate now. So it will likely pass the Assembly next week, and I wouldn't expect to hear much more from it after that.
And I think I have a clip here that you provided. Thank you, Sean, from the debate last week. This is State Representative, is it Leon Young?
Leon Young from Milwaukee.
Let's not go back to those Jim Crow days. Just because more minorities are participating in the election process, let's not change the rules.
And what's he referring to? Let's not go back to Jim Crow days.
Well, Young says that you have these voter ID requirements and you end up driving down turnout among African Americans and other minorities. And actually, a recent study by Rutgers University of states that do have photo ID requirements showed that it does drive out turnout slightly, and it drives it down more among minorities. And so that's kind of been the argument amongst Democrats, is that you pass this, you know, you're gonna take a step backward. I don't, you know, use that in a couple bills here, but you're gonna end up making people not vote, and that shouldn't be the goal. The Republican argument for this has basically been that it's I've heard it called the world's most common sense reform, and that, you know, it'll restore integrity to the elections and make sure that one person gets one vote.
Yeah. Now, this bill, and I've got to check the weather, but this was not actually to institute the photo ID. It would be to put a referendum question on the ballot, right?
So a little different than in years past, where if it passed, this passed the Senate and Assembly last session. So if it passed it again this session, it could go to the public to decide, do you want to have this requirement? And Republicans feel like the majority of people would have agreed with them.
All right, let's check the weather, and then we'll talk more in our State Capitol Report. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. 18 minutes past 6 o'clock now on this Monday, March the 5th. Coming up after 8 o'clock this morning, it's the first Monday of the month, and that means it's time for Wisconsin Public Radio's director, Phil Corvo, to join us to share some news and hear your feedback. We're going to have a special focus next hour on new technology and technical issues with also a special guest, Steve Johnston, the director of engineering and operations at Wisconsin Public Radio. That's coming up after 8 o'clock. Right now, talking with Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter. It's our state capitol report. And Sean, we have a caller, Stephen LaCrosse, who has a question for you. Hi, Steve.
Good morning, Joy and guests. I wanted to ask about the partial veto reform measure, the so-called Frankenstein veto. Sheila Harsdorf and Tim Carpenter are co-sponsoring a bill, an amendment actually, that would limit that and prevent future governors from cutting and pasting budget items and diverting funds, things that have happened in the past. I'm wondering, it did pass the Assembly and Senate once already, passed the Assembly again, it's being held up in the Senate. Is this idea dead, or can they bring it up later in the session?
Oh, I'm sorry, Sean. Go ahead.
Sure. Democrats, it's dead for this budget, you could say. It needed to be on the ballot, the April ballot, if there was any chance of it passing before the governor gets the next budget from the legislature and has a chance to do all these vetoes again. So for this budget, it's dead. But Democrats have said that they can adjust it in the Senate so that it takes effect in 2010, and that way nobody knows who's going to be governor for the next at that point. And so that's kind of where it stands right now. If they can actually do that, you could see it on ballots later on, but it's not going to affect this next budget. And Governor Jim Doyle will have as much power as he always did to rewrite the budget to his liking.
All right. Thank you very much, Steve. Also last week on Thursday, it was the third annual State of the Tribes address. And we have with us Brian Bull, Wisconsin Public Radio's assistant news director, who covered that. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, Joy.
How are you?
Oh, I'm pretty well.
Good.
For Monday.
Yeah. So what was the theme of the State of the Tribes address this year?
It was a very interesting address compared to the previous ones that we've covered before. This one seemed to be very conversational in nature. I would say that it was it had a certain amount of formality to it. But the main point that Patricia DePerry seemed to be punctuating was accountability, making sure that the concerns and needs of Indian Country were expressed to the legislature, but not simply to let it go by the wayside following that. She essentially challenged lawmakers to stand by their words, in other words, put them into action. She struck a more testy, feistier note. She's always been someone who's prided herself on speaking her mind and making no apologies about that. She also, though, if the Indian leaders in the Crown thought they were getting off easy, she also turned to the issue of Indian gaming and casino development.
Yeah.
Saying that that issue was tearing the tribes apart internally across the state of Wisconsin.
In fact, I have a clip from Patricia DePerry, and she is the chair of the Red Cliff?
Yeah, Red Cliff Band of Lake Superior Chippewa, way, 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 way up north.
Yeah, and here she is from Thursday's address.
The problem with the Indian in 2007, believe you me, is still a problem. Bigotry, racism is still alive and well. We ourselves need a lot of work as well. We are in a self-termination era right now. And excuse me, we don't need your help to get us there. We're doing it to ourselves.
Oh, yeah, she is feisty there. what is she referring to there, Brian?
She's referring to the development of casinos throughout the state, and it's worth noting that the Red Cliff Band has a casino way up north, but it's been struggling ever since it was created. They are trying to get one built in Beloit, which would be a very advantageous place to put it because it's on that Madison, Milwaukee, Chicago thoroughfare, so it would see a lot of traffic, a fair amount of tourism, whereas their current one is a little isolated, to put it nicely. The plan has been opposed by at least one other tribe. Ho-Chunk have publicly opposed it. And so she's asking later in the speech where the Indian hearts are, that she was brought up to learn to share the wealth, so to speak, that basically the infighting, the politicking that goes into developing these casinos that are helping so many of the larger tribes. She's basically saying that you guys have your hands in the pot. We'd like to kind of divulge in some of that also, but you're not letting us. You're opposing us. And that's kind of the self-termination that she's referring to.
Yeah.
She's definitely has that very fist-on-your-hips kind of attitude. And also, as compared to the previous addresses by her brother-in-law, Raymond DePerry, who gave the very first one, he brought up the issues of Indian mascots, a very, you know, well-known social issue mm-hmm. with many of the tribes. And she's been one to just kind of speak more to the immediate, I would say, practical issues of health care, education, proper housing and the like. I don't think that she's necessarily dismissed the issue of Indian mascots, but she says that there's more pressing needs right now.
Yeah. So what kind of reaction did you hear following her address?
Well, she did get a standing ovation, from what I could gather here, and some parties have been a little tight-lipped about what they think of it. I believe that it was Mike Hipsch who had said that they do agree with DePerry that there needs to be more education done on the issues of tribal sovereignty, the ability for tribes to self-govern or rule. He said that that is something that all legislators should know and understand when they approach tribes on the issue and why they are striving to be so self-sufficient and independent. I've not heard any statements from the Ho-Chunk, any of the other tribes, about the self-termination issue and the politicking that's going on. I'm guessing that's going to be something that we're going to see work its own way out through as they try to develop this casino in Beloit, which I do understand has approval by the BIA to be developed, but I think there's also some red tape that it's going to have to navigate through Washington right now to make it a reality.
Brian, thanks a lot for being with us.
Thank you, Joy.
Brian Bull, Wisconsin Public Radio's assistant news director. He covered the State of the Tribes address last Thursday at the state capitol. And Sean Johnson, I wanted to bring you back into this because it's not, it's somewhat related. There was a big news story on the front pages on Friday that a Kenosha businessman has been indicted on charges related to political donations that he gave Governor Jim Doyle. Tell us about what this is and how big a deal this is.
Sure. Dennis Troja is a Kenosha businessman who has been pushing for a Kenosha casino for some time now. And prosecutors allege that he used loans from a business that he controlled. He would give loans to his family members. They would turn around and write checks to the governor. So in essence, prosecutors say he was going past state campaign finance limits. And they say he was doing it in order to secure an Indian gaming compact. The governor has the final say on that.
So we don't know if he's guilty yet. Obviously, he was just indicted. But I hear the governor. Some are pushing for the governor that somehow he should return this money that this man gave his campaign.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, Republicans came out with a statement along those lines almost immediately after the indictment was handed down. The governor's name came up. I mean, and people were saying to give back money last year when there was a civil servant who was working in his administration, not hired by the governor, but working for him, who was indicted for awarding a state contract for allegedly political considerations. This one's a little different. I mean, this is going after somebody who's pursuing the governor, and it's a pay-to-play allegation, but it doesn't necessarily say that the governor reciprocated that, or that the governor said, "You give us this money, mm-hmm. and you'll get your casino." There's no allegations in this indictment that the Doyle people were encouraging this, other than asking for donations.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll let this play out. We have a question that I do want to have you address before news time. Jay in Wausau, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning. Sean, I was wondering, the Wisconsin State Journal yesterday ran a piece on the Supreme Court candidate, Judge Ziegler, highlighting some cases that she took from the West Bend Savings Bank. Currently, they're mentioning four, but I think very soon it'll become clear that there are somewhere around 40 cases that she has heard involving West Bend. The problem being that she did not seem to notify the parties that her husband, JJ, is a director of the bank.
Yeah, we're almost at news time, so this was a story. Did you see this story, Sean?
Yeah, it was a D. Hall story in the Madison, Wisconsin State Journal, and it looks like it may be one of the issues or the first big issues to sort of emerge in this race that hasn't gotten much attention thus far.
Yeah, and she didn't disclose this conflict of interest or this other interest, and she was supposed to, according to the rules.
The caller was pretty familiar with it.
Yeah, sure was. You know what? We're going to have to leave it there, and we will talk more about the Supreme Court race. I think we have the candidates scheduled for next week, I'm pretty sure, and we'll talk more about that. Thanks, Sean.
Thanks, Joy.
Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio, state government reporter. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 7:36 on this Monday, March the 5th. This is our regular weekly state capitol report. Every Monday in the 7 o'clock hour, we talk about what's going on under the state capitol dome, what our legislators are up to. We heard Sean Johnson, our state government reporter, in our first half hour tell us about some of the action taken last week in the state assembly on a number of issues. We heard from Brian Bull, Wisconsin Public Radio's assistant news director, about the State of the Tribes address that happened last week. We didn't get a chance to talk with Sean about some of the stuff on the agenda for this week, and one of them is that the Committee on Labor, Elections, and Urban Affairs is going to be holding a hearing on what's being called the Milwaukee Initiative in the governor's proposed budget. And we will talk with the chair of that committee during this half hour and welcome your thoughts and questions for him, Spencer Coggs. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. You can also send us an email to talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Let me welcome our guest, Spencer Coggs, a Democratic state senator from Milwaukee, chair of the Senate Committee on Labor, Elections, and Urban Affairs. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for being with us. So you're holding this hearing in Milwaukee. Why?
Well, it's because it's the Milwaukee Initiative. We felt that we should hold the hearing in Milwaukee so you can get Milwaukee input. As the governor talks about growing Wisconsin, this particular initiative is actually growing Milwaukee, and I think it's important because the governor has kind of stated that a strong Milwaukee means a strong Wisconsin. And I believe the governor said something to the effect of that it was time for everyone in our state to understand that we're all in this together, that our destiny is together. And so a strong Milwaukee means a strong state of Wisconsin.
Yeah. So the hearing will be tomorrow at 10 o'clock at the Northside YMCA on North Avenue in Milwaukee. Tell me, in general, I know it's a big package, but in general, what are the Milwaukee initiatives?
Well, thematically, what the governor basically is doing is saying that we deserve to have more jobs and more workforce development in Milwaukee, and in order to accomplish that, we have to shore up our educational and workforce training infrastructure. And then finally, if you're going to do that, you have to take care of the people's health. So it basically is a package of affordable health care, educational initiatives that lead to job and workforce development.
Yeah, and the estimates I've seen on this is that this would be about $80 million in additional spending to be spent to help in these areas in Milwaukee.
Yes, it'll be $80 million in new money for Milwaukee, and we just have to remember that Milwaukee really is a hub for the state of Wisconsin. So at the public hearing tomorrow, we have invited Secretary Michael Morgan from the Department of Administration to outline the Milwaukee Initiative, and we're going to have Mayor Tom Baird of Milwaukee talking about the impact of it, and also Superintendent William Andrikopoulos, who is the Milwaukee Public School Superintendent, and a number of other speakers will be invited to kind of assess the impact that it will have, not just on the city of Milwaukee, but also the state. So we're going to have Secretary Treasurer Sheila Cochran from the Milwaukee County Labor Council, Ralph Holman from the Milwaukee Urban League, a local entrepreneur, Derek Martin from Lena's Food Market, and so that we have a balance between our north side and south side of the city of Milwaukee. We're going to have Executive Director Ricardo Diaz from the United Community Center also speaking.
Yeah. Now, I know you've barely gotten started in hammering out this next state budget, but what sorts of reactions are you getting from your colleagues in the legislature about whether we should be spending more taxpayer money, taxpayers from all over the state of Wisconsin, on Milwaukee initiatives?
Yeah, as you know, in the past, we've had this kind of stick-it-to-Milwaukee mm-hmm. mentality, and there's been some parochialism. In other words, you know, why can't I get more money for Wisconsin Rapids versus Milwaukee? And a number of us from the Milwaukee area will be making not the altruistic case, but the economic case that Milwaukee really is key to the rest of the state. In our neighboring states, in Illinois, they understood that once they emphasized their biggest city, Chicago, it became their economic engine. The same way in Minnesota, when they began to emphasize Minneapolis and actually St. Paul, the Twin Cities, it was that much more economically better for commerce in the state of Minnesota, and that's what we intend to do and prove with the Milwaukee Initiative, that the $80 million that we will invest will be sticking with Milwaukee rather than Tommy Thompson, who said he wanted to stick it to Milwaukee.
Yeah, that was during that stadium tax debate, and he said stick it to him.
Exactly.
But do you still think that that exists with the I don't know, the general citizen of Wisconsin who might live outside of Milwaukee, that do you think that that attitude is there, that we don't really care about Milwaukee and Milwaukee can take care of itself?
Well, obviously, each region of the state of Wisconsin always thinks of themselves first, but I think there is less of this me, the rest of the state can, you know, go to blazes kind of mentality. I think that we are beginning to understand that we all are in this together. And there has been a tendency in the past for us from Milwaukee to talk about outstate Wisconsin. We're not doing that anymore. And I think with the Doyle administration and the change in the majority in the Senate, we're going to reemphasize that there are key elements of making our state greater. And one of the key elements has got to be Milwaukee. Milwaukee really is the gateway to the rest of the state of Wisconsin, especially from the south. And so as we increase our commerce and increase our infrastructure in Milwaukee, it's got to do great things economically for the rest of the state.
Yeah, let me bring in a caller, Jerry in Genesee Depot. Hi, Jerry, you're on the air. Jerry, I hope you're at the phone right now. Turn your radio down, and you can go ahead. She's not there. So we'll go to break, and then, Jerry, get to your phone, and or else I won't be able to take your call. We are on a delay, so you need to have your radio turned off and listen through the telephone. 1-800-642-1234 is our number if you would like to talk to Spencer Coggs, a Democratic state senator from Milwaukee. He is chair of the Senate Committee on Labor, Elections, and Urban Affairs, holding a hearing, a public hearing, in Milwaukee tomorrow on the governor's Milwaukee Initiatives. From the proposed state budget. The governor proposing spending some $80 million in additional money on some things to help out Milwaukee, from putting more police officers on the street, to put more nurses in the schools, to smaller class sizes, to more job training. What do you think? What questions do you have? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's about 14 minutes before 8 o'clock. Coming up after 8, it's the first Monday of the month, and that means it's time for Wisconsin Public Radio's director, Phil Corvo, to join us to share some news about Wisconsin Public Radio and to answer your questions about Wisconsin Public Radio. Today, we're going to focus in on new technology that's changing the sound of Wisconsin Public Radio and what it means to you, plus answer any of your questions you have about technical issues, reception issues, that sort of thing, as we welcome in Steve Johnson, Director of Engineering and Operations at Wisconsin Public Radio. That's coming up after 8. Right now we're talking with Spencer Coggs. He's a Democratic state senator from Milwaukee. He is chair of the Senate Committee on Labor, Elections, and Urban Affairs, holding a hearing tomorrow in Milwaukee to get testimony on the governor's proposals to spend about $80 million more dollars in Milwaukee on a variety of issues called Milwaukee Initiatives. The governor says that the success of Milwaukee is important to all of us all over the state of Wisconsin, and that we need to understand that it's time for everyone to come together on this. And we welcome your questions for Spencer Coggs. And before we go to the phones, though, Senator Coggs, why is it so important, do you think? Why is the success of Milwaukee important to the entire state of Wisconsin?
Well, Milwaukee has such a large chunk of the state's population that if it begins to go down, the entire state goes down. Let's take MPS for an example. With Milwaukee public school system, sometimes our grade point average kind of hurts the state's grade point average. So the governor is putting something like $15 million to increase student achievement with an emphasis on math and graduation rates. So this will be an opportunity for the city of Milwaukee and Milwaukee Public Schools to show that we can increase our graduation rate, to increase our ability in math and science to help the rest of the state, because, you know, with Milwaukee, the rest of the state actually has fairly decent grade point averages, so we can actually increase Wisconsin to perhaps be number one in the entire country.
And I think we have Jerry and Genesee Depot with us. Do we, Jerry?
Do we what?
Have you? Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. No. Well, here's what I feel. I'd be the first one to try to help out in Milwaukee. I'm about 30 miles out of town, and I get in there a lot. But by the same token, if you look at the record of the management in the past 10 years with self-serving politicians, foolish projects that never came to fruition, and other things, the way the school system is being handled, I think we're wasting our money. Milwaukee's management is too poor to do this. I don't know what their solution is, but I think just throwing my money after some bad money already isn't going to help any. Look at their history. They're in trouble because of their pension plan, and you hear this and that. Maybe Milwaukee should go bankrupt and clear the deck and then start again. But I don't think throwing our money at it is going to help it. Take care.
Well, what do you say to that, Senator Cox?
Well, I understand where he's coming from, because we've had such a bad rap from previous gubernatorial administrations and, quite frankly, the previous majority in the state Senate used to out in Milwaukee as well. But I want Jerry to understand this is not about throwing money at Milwaukee. This is about targeting resources to improve Milwaukee, and especially, as it mentioned, MPS, Milwaukee Public School Systems. This would have to be, in order to achieve and get this $50 million extra money, this would have to be research-based programs that would prove that they would be a good fit for Milwaukee Public Schools. So this is, in effect, this is outcome-based kind of things. As it relates to safety, he talks about, you know, throwing money away. Well, we want to increase the number of police in the city of Milwaukee, and also, quite frankly, the number of nurses in schools so that our kids will be healthy. And those are the kind of ancillary things that had been missing in the past. When he talks about throwing money at the problem, we're targeting resources to make sure that the infrastructure is better.
Yeah. Well, I'm not trying to stir things up here, but why shouldn't the Milwaukee area property taxpayer fund those police officers on the streets or those nurses in the schools like maybe Jerry would argue, you know, his own community does, in his community?
And, Joy, that's a very, very good question. The reality is twofold. First off, Milwaukee is a property-poor area, and Milwaukee Public Schools is a property-poor district, so we cannot afford to put more money. And it's just the basis of everything. That's why I think the governor is also, unlike previous governors, is also understanding that Milwaukee and shared revenue gives a lot of money to the state, and not that much comes back. Well, this particular governor said that Milwaukee deserves to have more money for shared revenue, especially for what we put into the state, but even more so coming back for our students to improve, because Milwaukee has to improve for the state of Wisconsin to improve. If you want to compare us to Minnesota, if you want to compare us to Illinois, what did they do to improve? They improved their largest city, and that's what we need to do in the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah. Thanks to Jerry. I'm going to go next to Robert in Fond du Lac. Hello, Robert.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm from Minneapolis, and I've been over here in Wisconsin for 15 years, and the inner city of Minneapolis has deteriorated dramatically with the amount of increase in crime and the amount of poor schools. And the biggest part of it, and I lived there for 15 years, was a simple fact that busing forced a lot of white people simply to leave Minneapolis and move to the suburbs because they couldn't get their kids into the community school, and it really just tore Minneapolis and St. Paul, tore them apart. And as the schools deteriorated, the communities deteriorated because the parents that were left there didn't care about their schools as much as the people that had left. And I see the same thing in Milwaukee. The crime's there. The crime was in Minneapolis, and it got worse. The gangs showed up. And I'm not trying to point my finger at the problem with busing, but busing has, I think, in many cases, in Minneapolis, St. Paul, has tore the community apart, and people have left it because they didn't care for what was happening in the schools. And what you got left over is a lot of people that have moved in there or have stayed there that aren't willing to work, aren't willing to spend the money on the schools, aren't willing to take care of their community. Yeah. And now the governor wants us to take money out of Fond du Lac, out of our schools, and shove it into Milwaukee schools. I think it's a joke, absolute joke. I'll take my your comments off the air.
Well, thank you to Robert for that those comments. Let me just mention especially how he had compared Minneapolis. Milwaukee, once again, is a property-poor district, so we don't have the resources by ourselves to improve, so we need the help of the rest of the state. But in helping us, it helps the rest of the state economically grow as well. And he also mentioned busing. Well, there has been, under new administrations, a de-emphasis on busing in the city of Milwaukee. So we're turning that whole thing around and emphasizing neighborhood schools with our current and new school superintendent. We also have a recent new mayor, and we're looking at Milwaukee in a whole new way with the promise and the kept promise of this particular governor to reemphasize Milwaukee to improve the state. What we're talking about is targeted programs like Project New Hope, which is a proven project which will create 200 new transitional jobs. We're talking about $1 million to help create 450 new summer jobs for youth to keep them off the street. We're talking about $500,000 for after-school programs for Boys and Girls Club to help the city of Milwaukee. So these targeted pots of money will reap literally tens of millions of dollars in benefit for not just Milwaukee, but the entire state.
Yeah. Comment on Robert saying that he was saying this was the case in Minneapolis, but he was saying he thought it was similar in Milwaukee, that people in Minneapolis or in Milwaukee don't care about the crime. They don't care about the schools. Is that really the case?
Actually, no. I go back to my point of it being a property poor district. If you are poor and you care, you still don't have the resources to improve. If you are poor and you care, you still need the help of local government, which we have a new crew of county supervisors, a new crew of common council, people who have to ramp up to this job of electoral politics. But that's where the governor has seen that we need help, and he has rightfully said we should emphasize this. Let's go to the fact that in Milwaukee we have the largest number of people on public assistance. So what the governor is basically saying is that we have, you know, our efforts too scattered about. So he's streamlining this whole thing about merging child welfare, child support, child care services, and W-2 programs into one agency, which would be the Wisconsin Department of Children and Families, and that would make sure that all these poor children have affordable health care and their families are augmented so that they will not have to stay on public assistance, which actually hurts Robert and hurts Jerry of Genesee Depot. So, in effect, we are trying to rectify this this whole malaise of public assistance and a property poor district dragging down the rest of the state to try to uplift Milwaukee, which will actually help all those various parts of the rest of the state.
Let's get in another caller or two quickly. We're almost out of time. Russ and Stanley. Hi, Russ.
How you doing? I just got one question. You sat there, Mr. Cox, and you said that if we help Milwaukee, that's going to help Oshkosh and Fond du Lac and Eau Claire and Madison. Just tell me how. Forget about the semantics and the rhymes that you're talking. Please tell me how my helping Milwaukee is going to help me up in Stanley, Wisconsin. Thank you.
I'll give you a really concrete example. The more you have a lack of jobs and lack of opportunity, the more you have people who feed into the criminal justice system, which is a major economic drag, and also the incarceration system of the state of Wisconsin, which is also a major drag. And everybody knows that the city of Milwaukee has 80% of all African Americans in the state of Wisconsin, of which we also have the highest incarceration rate of African Americans. So if we can reverse that trend, we save money in Stanley. We save money in Genesee Depot. We save money in Wisconsin Rapids. So even if you don't want to buy the altruistic argument, at least buy the economic argument of saving yourself money by not throwing money down a rat hole of incarceration and criminal justice and invest in Wisconsin's future.
Yeah, and we only have a minute to go. No time for Sarah in Burlington, who thinks that Milwaukee should get this additional money out of the state budget because she thinks that Milwaukee is a real gem and it could be a treasure trove for Wisconsin as a tourism site. In 30 seconds, Senator Coggs, is that part of this? I mean, we could really shine up Milwaukee as...
Oh, absolutely. If you look at Chicago, what they did with Navy Pier in the downtown 15 years ago, who wanted to go to Chicago? Now it's a destination city with what the governor has promoted as a premier resort area designation for Milwaukee. We can begin to get more tourism, which means more dollars for the state of Wisconsin, and it helps everybody, so that Milwaukee is no longer a drain on the rest of the state, but also can be an economic drain for it.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Spencer Coggs, Democratic State Senator from Milwaukee. Thanks to Leo Duran and Karen Prager for producing this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.